10 seconds to go in the fourth.
You don't need a three.
Drive it. Bledsoe puts it up and in! Ties it up with 4 seconds to go. Thomas loses the ball. A chance to win. Ulas! Unbelievable!
Got Kyle's English, so.
No, what it is that you think I'm the sixth man coming off the bench, but I'm actually James Harden.
Yeah, you maybe keep telling yourself that.
You're like the dandruff that falls out of James Harden's beard.
Dude, let's be real. James Harden doesn't have beard dandruff. Come on. You know what, man? You know what your problem is, James?
I don't care.
No, you're a hater, man. I'm just kidding. It's not a problem that you're a hater. It's great. In fact, it's so great that you've built up, you know, a nice following. People read your content. People listen to your voice on the Truth Celtics podcasts. People care enough that they're listening to this episode right now. Thanks for joining us. This is another roundtable episode around the NBA. That's what the segment is officially called. I'm Chris Axman, host of Almighty Ball and NBA Show, and founder of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And that network is the way that I can bring you quality content like the podcast that you're about to listen to. For example, our Sun Show features Greg. He is one of the co-hosts of the Solar Panel. Thanks for joining us. Thanks, Espo. I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate how great the Solar Panel is.
I'm happy to be here, and can we hurry this up? Because it's like midnight here, and some of us have to get to sleep, you know.
My bad.
Guys, this isn't healthy for my self-esteem, but, you know, that's all right. If I wanted an episode that would be healthy for my self-esteem, I wouldn't bring on James Hollis. At J Hollis Hoops, James.
I mean, I really just came on here to berate you as much as possible before you hang up on me, so... Get it cracking.
All right. Well, you can find him at J Hollis Hoops, and you can listen to him on the Truth Celtics podcast. Also fantastic. His last episode, he had, is it at Free Darko? He had,
Free Darko.
Yeah, Bethlehem Shoals. That might be a pseudonym.
It is, because his real name is Nathaniel Friedman.
Yeah. But I think he had to change it because he had some controversial statements. But he's a controversial guy. He's a great guy. He started Free Darko. And I don't think I've reacted to any of James's great guests. And he's had a lot of them with as much, oh my God, how did you pull that off? So you should listen to that episode. It's great.
Thank you much. I'm glad that I finally, you know, met your high standards.
No, you should go back and listen to every episode. So, listener, now we can start talking about what I wanted to talk about today, starting with the Pelicans a little bit. We just watched them get dangerously close to being beaten by the Lakers. The Lakers are bad, and they almost beat the Pelicans. And I also want to talk about some injuries around the NBA and then the Suns. So, all right, starting with the Pelicans, did you guys watch that game? What were your thoughts?
Look, the Pelicans are going to take time to figure this out. They just threw Boogie Cousins in there. They're trying to figure out how to play as a team all over again. It's not easy when you drop a new superstar, a guy that's used to touching the ball almost every possession in Sacramento into the middle of things. Basically, they're in training camp still. They're trying to understand each other. Nothing surprises me right now with the Pelicans.
What about you, James?
Yeah, I mean, same thing. They got blessed with Boogie fell into their hands and they weren't ready for it. The roster around them just doesn't really fit very well. They don't have enough shooting. I mean, we got two high usage big men who are used to really dominating the ball, you know, and they're trying to make it work the best they can. And so, I thought they'd have a little more success, in this out of the gates. But I'm not really too shocked or worried about anything about what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I tweeted earlier today that anyone who is now thinking that the Kings won the trade is missing the point, because I think you guys are right. I think that there's a lot of roster problems that are glaring, and they're the same type of problems that made it so that Anthony Davis, probably a top five NBA player, couldn't even win 35 games or so with the roster as currently constructed. So you add Boogie and you're almost doubling down on the whole Anthony Davis thing because they play a very similar role, but still have all of the fundamental issues that you had before. But I think that goes beyond the roster. I think it goes into ownership and management and coaching. Is that something you guys have thought about? I just don't think that Alvin Gentry is the coach for this team based on what I understand to be his strengths and weaknesses.
Look, I don't put this on Alvin Gentry. He's a guy that in my time working for the Suns, I actually got to spend a decent amount of time with. And he took a roster with the basically the corpse of Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire on one good wheel, and a bunch of filler.
That's an assistant coach, though, right?
No, he was the head coach when they went in 2010 to the Western Conference Finals, and
it's a different NBA though, and it's a different kind of roster, and it like he's great with the motion moving offense, and even then Nash was still really good before his back just turned into Cheeto dust.
Oh yeah, did he coach the Shaq team?
Yeah.
He coached the Shaq team, and then the team that went to the Western Conference Finals and probably would have beaten the Lakers if it weren't for a Kobe airball and a Ron Artest prayer with 0.3 seconds left on the clock in game
five.
That
was wonderful.
You're totally right, though, James. This is a different NBA, but the thing is, if you hire a guy like Alvin Gentry and then you don't give him a roster that plays to his strengths,
right. How
does that make any sense? I think it's on Dell Demps and it's on ownership that if you're going to hire a coach, you give him the pieces that fit into the way he coaches. You don't give him a roster that doesn't make sense for the way he's had success in the past and then turn around and go, oh, well, I'm sorry, you screwed up. No, if you're shopping for the groceries and you don't get the things he needs to make the right meal, ownership and the general manager there are who's at fault, really.
Yeah,
now, Alvin will be the fall guy, but
what you're saying is absolutely correct, Greg, is the fact that when ownership does things, even if it doesn't make sense, they're still ownership. So they're not going to, in this context, they're not going to be wrong as far as, I mean, it's still his ass.
Yeah, I think dysfunction starts from the top, and I couldn't have put it better than how you put it during that, tangential point. So yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. I don't really even have to elaborate any more on it. We'll just, there is a possibility though, and I think we saw this during the Pau Gasol Lakers era. There were the same bus problems that are screwing up the team right now during that iteration of the Lakers that won a couple of championships. The difference is that Pau Gasol just dropped in their lap for Kwame Brown. So you can get into a position where management cannot be great, ownership can be bad, but it just doesn't matter. Like you pull together two incredibly talented, the two best big men in the league, and you somehow make it work, even though it wasn't as carefully executed as the Warriors, who were light years ahead, and they're having more success because of it. So since you can't kick out ownership, like James said, I think that, Dell Demps probably is going to end up going. I don't think we can talk about who the best, general manager replacement is, but I think that, new management probably means new head coach. And I'm wondering if you guys have thought about that, because I've thought about potential coaches and I've landed on one that I think is perfect.
Oh God.
No, you're going to agree with me.
Why not just go all in on Kentucky and get John Calipari? If you're gonna double down on Kentucky, just bring in the guy that coached him in college too.
Well,
I think I see it happening. That's pretty good.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's an option. All right. What do you guys think about trying to pull Kevin McHale?
I mean, that's not the worst in the world, I guess.
Feel like if anyone can have the conversation with Boogie and have it be an ongoing conversation where you can have it every day, as you can have it every game after he gets his first technical, right? You can say, Boogie, listen to me. You either want to be one of the best big men in NBA history or you don't. And if you want to, I can help you do that. You need to chill out. You need to settle down. And you need to listen and play the way that I'm going to coach you to play. And that's what I think everyone has consensus said. Okay, if Boogie's going to utilize his talent and optimize it and actually win in the way that he never did in Sacramento, then that's, he has to like let that sink in. And I just feel like Kevin McHale, if he can't do it, then that's sort of like, you know, it's over, you know, like Boogie just is doomed to be a superstar who doesn't utilize his talent and is always on losing teams. I mean,
so let me ask you guys a question. Hold on. Let me ask you a question. When did Kevin McHale retire? Was it the early 90s, right?
Yes.
From basketball?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, somewhere around there.
Okay. And Boogie's how old?
400.
Mid 20s. He's 27 or 28, I believe.
Look, I just think that
I get what you're saying, James. Okay. He doesn't. Why is Kevin McHale going to resonate with Boogie Cousins? It's not. He's not a guy that Boogie would have watched or has immense amount of respect for.
That's what I was trying to say. It's like he knows the highlights and he knows that McHale's a legend. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, George Karl couldn't reach Boogie, and he's a legend. He was a legendary coach, even though he's a piece of crap.
Come on, that was a different situation.
I just don't know. You know.
Part of it is that Kevin McHale is a big man, right? He can say, listen, Boogie, here's how you're going to score on the interior. He can also have that conversation with Anthony Davis. I mean, he spent all of his career knowing how to dominate with two dominant big men.
If you want to go that route, why not Patrick Ewing, then, a guy that these guys actually probably saw, at least at the tail end of their career, play that may even resonate more with them, a guy who's been hungry for a head coaching job. If that's what you're looking at, and you're just looking for a guy who was a successful big man who might be able to talk to these guys on that level, why not go after a Patrick Ewing?
You know what? I have a theory about that. There's a reason Patrick Ewing blackballed from a head coach that we'll never know about.
Wait, finish chewing, finish swallowing, and then make your point?
No, this is more fun this way. There's a reason that Patrick Ewing's been blackballed, and we'll never find out about it until somebody's deathbed or somebody gets pissed off at the league. It's a lot like when MJ was banished to play baseball. Wink, wink.
Well, he's an assistant coach on the Hornets, I think.
Assistant coach, not a head coach. And there's a reason he's been passed over as being a head coach for so long. I don't think that's ever going to happen, and there's something we don't know.
Is it the frozen envelope? Is that what you're implying?
No, it's on the way. Probably something to do with the Gold Club in Atlanta. So I just don't know if Gentry's the right coach. I don't know. I can't think of who the right coach might be.
Well, we just named three decent options, and
I think they're all wrong. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you want me to say. God, Kevin McHale's not the answer there. I don't, because he's good at reaching people, and you're right. I think he's a player's coach, but I don't know if he's the answer.
I think he can coach a modern NBA team too. But, you know, the biggest thing is that with Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday, and Boogie as your framework, you know, you should know this, James. You can basically build the Bird-era Celtics. Like, Drew is the same as Dennis Johnson, right? And scrappy white point guards are a dime a dozen. Like, TJ McConnell wasn't even drafted. Like, that's basically Danny Ainge. You can, like, pick them up off the scrap heap. And all you need to add to that, right, is one of the most iconic and greatest players in NBA history. And, like, that's easy, right? Just pick up Luke Babbitt. I mean, he's well on the way to being Larry Bird, I think. So you have the framework for how to win right there.
Then just reincarnate Red Auerbach and let him coach the damn team.
There you go.
That's smart.
Problem solved.
So, but seriously, no, they do need I guess they got to give Gentry another year. And once you get shooters in, and we know that Brown loves to run, you got to modify, and it's still pace and space, you know, I guess. But I think our boy Free Darko actually wrote about this. Boogie is more of a hub kind of guy. He can operate from the high post and the post. And Brown is more of a guy who likes to play kind of in space and freely. He does his thing without really, you know, he'll catch the ball in space and shoot.
Yeah, he's kind of KG. He kind of plays like that a lot.
Exactly. So I think they really are a good fit.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I just think that there are real issues, and actually I just talked about some of them with Adam Mares on a podcast a couple before this, I think. There are real issues that need to be resolved, and even beyond coaching, which I think is probably an issue that needs to be resolved, I think that, you know, there's roster construction issues that stick out like a sore thumb. I think you have to give Gentry until the end of the year, but if they stay this bad, then I just think he's definitely not the answer. So
two things I'm going to guarantee real quick. They're not going to stay this bad. Boogie and Brow are going to get together, and just on sheer talent, they're going to start winning games. So right now, I think they're almost deferring to each other, and everyone's kind of on eggshells around each other as they try to make it start just playing ball here soon. They're going to be better.
Well, there's 20 games in the NBA season.
Who cares? That's my point. Right now, it's not Gentry's fault. The roster stinks. Against OKC, they combined for like almost 80 points. Those two guys, and like no one else had more than like 7. I think it's not his fault that they don't have the shooters they need. So this summer they got to upgrade the. And I mean, I don't know. Do you say then that you should just go ahead and scrap it and say, Gentry, you're not our guy?
Well, no, I mean, but if they're this bad, then I think that means something.
They're not.
But
we know they're not going to be this bad.
Espo, what were you going to say?
This trade was never about this season. It's about next year. They knew that this was going to be a bit of a cluster the rest of this year trying to figure it out. This is all about, can Boogie and Brow get it together next year, play well enough to where you know, okay, it makes sense for us to have DeMarcus and long term here. And that's what this was always about, is next year. If they get it together this year and make a run of the playoffs, great. But next year is the year that really matters with this experiment.
Okay, that's the thing. That's not great. Right now, the Pelicans are sixth, the sixth worst team, and they have a 21.5% chance at a top three pick, because that pick that they traded to Sacramento is top three protected, God knows how and why. And with the Suns, who we were going to talk about earlier, getting hot, I think there's a real chance that they end up being fourth. And if they end up fourth in the league, they have a 47% chance of getting a top three pick.
Huh.
That's fantastic math. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Yeah, no, I do preparation. I'm a real pro. So that's Sucker. That goes from, if they maintain pace right now, if they are still the sixth, it's two coin flips, call heads twice. That's the chances. And then it's a literal coin flip if they get down to fourth. So, and I think that might happen. The Suns and the Sixers, who are two of the teams below them, Suns are 5-5. Sixers also 5-5. Suns on a 3-win streak, and now Dario's going nuts for the Sixers. I think that could actually happen.
Yeah,
how great would it be if the Pelicans kept their pick, and if it was just Boogie for Buddy, straight up?
Well, then they got to run Vlade out of town in Sacramento at that point, right? I mean, you got to, if you're sitting there and you're Sacramento and you realize if there was no protection on this pick, this deal would look unbelievable if it's a top three. This whole thing is insane when you continue to look at it and you see how many different ways all of this could play out still for Sacramento and how bad this could look. And you know, if New Orleans gets a top three pick and has Boogie and Brow, it's a win-win for them. I don't think they care if they bottom out this year, get a great pick, and then they're great next year.
I think that's the best option. Because you can blame that on coaching, even if that's not true, and start fresh with. And here's the thing about the top three picks next year: they're perfect for the Pelicans roster. Every single one of them. I think Josh Jackson is a great fit at the three, and you can just like, you know, jettison either Solomon Hill, Dante Cunningham, or preferably both of them into the atmosphere. And that would be a big improvement, right? If Josh Jackson is your guy going forward, or if you want a guard to pair next to Drew Holiday, I mean, of course, Markel Fultz is Markel Fultz. But, I mean, even if they don't get Markel Fultz, even if it's Lonzo Ball, 6'6", and he's a really good passer, and I think that's going to be important for a team that already pretty much has all the scoring it needs in the 4 and 5.
You're not going to get an argument from me here. I mean, if they can bottom out, they get a top three pick, and they can add great talent to go along with these two guys. It makes the most sense. And yes, Alvin Gentry is going to be the fall guy, no matter what, because Dell Demps isn't going to fire himself. And Alvin Gentry is going to be out. They're likely going to get a high pick, and they're going to play for next year and hopefully find that winning formula. Sign Boogie long term, and everybody's happy in New Orleans. That's the way that they're hoping it plays out in New Orleans right now.
How beautiful would that be if the Pelicans kept their pick? I mean, that would be so...
I'd feel bad for Kings fans, honestly, because I already do. I feel terrible for Kings fans, and that was the... that's one of the little bits of silver... little glimmers of silver lining. So I for their sake, I hope they get it. Even though, I mean, it's still going to the same ownership, and they're going to probably make some bad decisions anyway, so... Maybe it's better if they do keep it at the Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny and great in like a Foster Wallace, Vonnegut style nihilistic black comedy universe. But I mean, yeah, I feel bad for Kings fans. So I think we pretty much agree, and we've sort of hinted at this over the course of the conversation. You just want to retain Drew Holiday, and then you have a 4 and a 5, and just put 3 and D guys. I think just get a really good shooters. Get as close as you can to just getting Ray Allen, Shane Battier, like the big three era had. Like just guys who hit their corner threes every time and draw the wings as far away from the basket as possible.
It sounds really easy to say that every team wants that same player.
Right, right.
And they're very scarce. And, like, it's, I mean, you know, OKC spent the last 4 years searching for that guy to pair with KD and Russ. And it's not as easy as it seems. You know what I mean? So that's where the problem comes in. We always say, like, same with Memphis. We always say, all Memphis needs is a couple of shooters. That's not that easy. Just to find some NBA level guys who can actually shoot and play defense. So,
yeah.
I'm not sure Ray Allen's actually retired yet. So he might be available to actually play that role. So,
hey,
that would be great. And I think that they knew that. I mean, they signed Solomon Hill, who's the D part of the three, in theory at least. And each one more might actually be good. He's shooting 40% from three. He's not perfect, but he's the type of guy who you're looking at. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Last thing before we move on, unless you guys have anything else to say. Every two technicals that Boogie gets, he's suspended for a game. They could totally end up being the fourth worst team. Like, they're three losses away from being the fourth win team. Like, they're three games up from I think the Suns are fourth. See, the Suns are Magic.
No, it's the Magic are fourth right now.
Right. They're three games up from the Magic. And, oh my God, this could happen.
I mean, okay.
Do you guys want to move on to Suns or talk injuries?
You pick whatever, but yeah.
Let's talk about Suns, because I think we might end the podcast there. Okay. So I think that as far as if we're looking at the future of the Phoenix Suns, I just want to pass the torch to Greg and see where he wants to run with it.
The future of the Phoenix Suns? Well, it's probably going to start and end with however this draft plays out, because as it is right now, this team has a lot of nice young pieces, but they don't have the guy. Devin Booker's great. He's a 1B. He's not a 1A. So you need to find that superstar that's going to lead this team to the next great Phoenix Suns iteration. I think they're going to have to do it through the draft. So they got to hope that they wind up with a top three pick and land a truly impactful guy in the draft, because the Suns aren't going to get one through free agency. And we've seen in the trade market, it's not always easy to land that superstar. Even when you have potentially the best offer to make, you get guys like Vlade Divac that fall in love with obscure guys on other teams. So it's not always easy to land that star. So I think it begins and ends with how this draft lottery plays out this summer.
I don't know. I'm a lot higher in them right now than you are, I think, Greg. And I get what you say about Booker being more of a 1B than a 1A. But, I mean, there's only so many 1As in the league in the first place. And even through the draft, I'm not too sure. I mean, how many 1As do you think are in this draft?
Okay, Espo, like, I agree. Well, first, I want to mention, like I said, Espo is the host of our Solar Panel podcast and watches the Suns a lot more than even I, who tries to watch every NBA game. A lot more Suns. So he totally might be right, but he's either 19 or 20, and NBA stars almost universally say that he's legit 1A, and I think that probably means something. He at least has the swagger of a guy like that, and he's so young, and he's good right now, more inefficient, I think, than people realize, but, I mean, he could be a 1A, right? I mean, like, that's in the cards.
He could be, and I'm not saying that I don't think the future is extremely bright for this team looking at the way the roster is. If they don't add that guy, say they get the fifth pick in this draft and they get another nice young piece, I think they're going to be very good. But for me, I've been a lifelong Suns fan, worked for the organization for 5 years, and what I want is a championship. I've seen enough teams make the playoffs, be good enough, but not great. And what this fan base wants is a championship. So when I look at it and I say they need to find that star, it's from that standpoint. I think they're good enough to make the playoffs 2-3 years down the road and be a very good team in the Western Conference with the young base that they have. But I'm thinking championship, and how do you get there? And the way you're going to get there is find the next man guy.
Let me guide you on your path to Zen. Okay. I've reached Celtic Zen. Because I was like you. I was walking in the wilderness yelling about my championship. I wanted another 2018, right? I realized you start losing yourself in that kind of thinking because you don't enjoy the journey, right? Boston was supposed to be a lottery team 2 years ago. The arrival of Isaiah Thomas turned it all around. Now, would you say Isaiah Thomas is a 1A? No, he's probably best as a 1B, even a 1C. But him with that coach and the team around them, they made themselves into the number two team in the East. They could steal a game from Cleveland, which I know is not that much of an accomplishment, but compared to a lot of teams, it is. And even if we don't make that trade this next summer, guess what? We're still a good team. We got another number one pick coming in. And I don't know how good that pick's gonna be.
Okay,
how many banners do you guys have, though? 16, let me start there.
Or 18. Yeah. I mean, how many
banners?
18.
Hold on, guys. Hey, everybody take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. I'm leading you to your Zen. Because I understand what you're saying. You want it to happen. You want it to happen now. You want to see that roadmap right now. The roadmap is not always in front of you. It might, you know, it's sometimes it's about little moves you make now and everything will fall into place later. It's almost like, think about the Harden trade, right? Houston kind of puttered along and muddied along at 500, and they moved a lot of pieces. Finally, the right deal fell in front of them. You have even better pieces to make one of those deals fall in front of you down the road. I'm not saying 5 years. I'm saying in like a year or two, right? Let's say a great deal comes along and you can move a couple of these nice young pieces you got to land a real deal star, and you're in money. You're in the money. So
I'm not greedy. I'm saying I want to see a championship before I die. We've been 49 years in the desert without a taste of a title as Suns fans, and I just want one.
Yeah,
I don't need 18. I just want one.
And that's the thing, right? Is that you've come so close. I mean, first, basically, you got the second pick in the draft that had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Let's start there, right?
Let's not go back to the 70s, bro.
Well, okay, and then go from Barkley.
The second pick in the draft in the David Robinson draft. Wound up with Armand Gilliam.
And then Barkley, and then Steve Nash. And yeah, I think it's a little bit different. That being said, I'm where James is at, where it's like you have to enjoy basketball for basketball and but it's like I think you have to, like, you know, shoot for a championship and not just try to play good basketball. So yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of both. One thing I want to touch on so that we're not talking about like theoretical basketball and like championships that are floating in the ethos.
Let me talk about the Suns hot play lately.
Can I leave with one touch point to bring up? I think that there's a 12% chance, maybe 8, that Marquese Chris is going to end up being a superstar.
I don't disagree with that. The guy's an athletic freak, and as long as he continues to improve on the defensive end, he's great around the rim, but as long as he continues to improve there, I think there's a chance of that. He's very, very good. He's much better than I thought he was going to be, because everything you heard was not a good rebounder, kind of gets lost in the game. He's very raw. He impressed me more this year than I expected to be impressed by him. So I think there's a chance that he turns into a star at some point, but I think you're right. It's probably closer to a 10% chance. It's not a sure thing.
I'm going to say it's closer to 25 to 30. I wanted him in
Boston.
I want to
buy into that reality, but...
Yeah, we know. You like being wrong. So my point is, at that kind of hops, you got that kind of athleticism. I mean, I'm seeing strides in him just recently, as far as, you know, from the beginning of the season to now. He was amazing against the Thunder tonight. Is that just tonight? Yeah, tonight. And he's just really coming a long way. You can see it. Against Boston. He was amazing against Boston. Definitely think, maybe not 25%, 30%, but he has all the tools. And, I mean, it's coming together right now for Phoenix. It looked really bad earlier this season. It was just a mess. And, again, I think a big part of the problem is that the playoffs are always in the back of their minds. You know, the Tyson Chandler move, and we have these young players, you know, Booker's in season two. It's not about what should be. You know, Eric Bledsoe's a vet, so – they have these expectations, but the rest of the roster is so raw. I just wish they didn't put that kind of expectations on them, even externally. You know, not even saying like, oh, you guys should make it. I enjoyed this team. I knew they would be bad this year, and I enjoyed just watching them play. I enjoyed when Booker has explosions. I enjoy when TJ Warren was going off road this season. I enjoy everything Marquise Chris does. You know what I mean? I just and the fact that they finally just sat Tyson Chandler down and said, all right, let's see what the young boys got. I respect that. That's good. I get that. It was good for Tyson to play early, and, you know, he's a leader, and he's shown these guys. But I'm really high on Phoenix. I'm bullish on your future, man. And in a lot of ways, I think your future is up there maybe with the Timberwolves, maybe, because these guys are great. And I think you're so deep and fresh and young and athletic.
Yeah, and, I agree. I mean, yeah. Espo, like, what do you think? What have you been watching that makes you more skeptical than me and James? And I might be wrong, but that's the vibe I'm picking up.
No, I believe in these young guys, and I think what Ryan McDonough, the general manager, has done is fairly impressive when you think about where they were when they made the trades that sent away Goran Dragic and Isaiah Thomas two trade deadlines ago. They've done the Lakers a full one. Yeah, and the let's not talk about that. And the Lakers pick. But yeah, they've made a complete 180, where they're headed in a much different direction. And I feel good about the future. I think some of it is being a Suns fan for as long as I have been. A lot of the fan base gets kind of bitter around here, because it's always been the bridesmaid, never the bride, and you wind up being skeptical of things. But honestly, I like the young core. I like the fact that they committed this year to letting a lot of them play, especially as of late, and I think it will do nothing but help them moving forward. And look, they do have a bright future, but they're still things to figure out. I mean, Brandon Knight is an anchor now. That's just $15 million sitting on the end of your bench. You got to figure out, how do you move that guy so he doesn't eventually cause issues in the locker room? You got to figure out what you're doing at center long term, because now Alex Len isn't the answer. You can tell that. And he's not playing major minutes even now. I think they're going to let him walk as a restricted free agent. Then you've got Tyson Chandler, who's too old to be part of this, part of the future. So do you keep
playing? What do you think about a hyperpower 4-5 of Chris and Dragon?
I would love. Small.
Yeah, and he's not ready. He's a project. He's going to take a little while to develop. So it's not a guy.
But that's okay. You have time.
Throw in there. I agree. But if we're talking, you know, you're not going to start Dragan Bender next year. He needs time. His build isn't big enough. He's probably going to play more three, which I don't know if it's the right position, but until he fills out, he's probably going to play more three. So he's not a huge liability on the defensive end in terms of bulk. So maybe in the future, it's a smaller 4-5 with Bender and Chris, but you got some questions to answer in that area. Your point guard situation, is Eric Bledsoe the guy you're going to stick with? Are you going to deal him and go fully into youth mode. What are you hoping to do long term there? There's some questions that still need to be answered. I'm happier with where they are now than where they were 2 years ago, even a year ago. There's a lot of hope now with Devin Booker and the young guys on this roster. And honestly, even guys like Tyler Ulis and Alan Williams, who have emerged over the last couple of weeks, are intriguing. Alan Williams has been a double-double machine. He has 7 double-doubles, and he hasn't played much this year. And there's a stat. Yeah, when he plays something like 16 minutes in a game, he's gotten a double-double every time. It's crazy what he can do. And he's just one of those guys, great guy, but hard worker that has instincts for basketball. He's just a natural rebounder, and nobody really expected it from him. So he's also a restricted free agent this summer, and I'd rather them throw money at him than Alex Len, because I think he has the higher upside in the long term, just based on how hard he works and his instinct for the game. And then Tyler Ulis, all 5'9 of him, is another guy that's just naturally gifted at what he does, and he's great on both ends of the floor. He can score at his size, which is impressive. But what he does on the defensive end, pestering point guards and getting in their grill, is very impressive. So I think if he were even 6 foot, he would have been a top 15 pick last year. But everybody looked at that size and thought, he's not going to be able to do it. Suns get him in the second round. And I think he's going to be a great backup for this team for years to come.
Yep.
Well, that answers the question of, is he a future starting point guard? And I think that
the only way he's a future, I mean, I think we pigeonholed Isaiah Thomas as a backup for years until he got to a perfect situation, and now we see what he's doing. And so he has, I think Ulis seems to have maybe starter potential. I mean, look, Muggsy Bogues starting on pretty good team, so he has, his size won't really hinder him. He has starter potential, especially
tiny, like Archibald,
especially the defense. But he's right now, obviously he's better slated, especially if, you know, in Phoenix he's going to be a backup.
Well, okay, so that's what I was going to say, right, is that my vision for the Phoenix Suns of the future is I don't think that you can make a point guard like that work. I think especially with Devin Booker not caring right now, and I can't imagine him being like a defensive stalwart, I think that it's going to be important to have like a really good defender. So my thinking with their roster as constructed, so Dragan Bender is 7'1", right? He's also 225 pounds. Okay. And 2 years younger than Kristaps, who is only 2 inches taller, 7'3", and weighs 240. So, I mean, he's roughly Kristaps sized. I think that he can play center. I think that he can be a good center, right? I mean, you're talking like, you know, 215, and then DeAndre is like 240, right? DeAndre, if you believe Coach, what's his name, right?
Have you looked at Dragan Bender, though?
Thank you.
I mean, the eye test is different. He's not the same build. This, no offense, Chris, but I think it's kind of the comparison to Kristaps is somewhat lazy. We go, oh, foreign guy, kind of tall, can kind of shoot. Huh, Kristaps and Dragan fit the same box. If you look at them, they're not on the same
plane. I'm talking defensively,
right,
though. I mean, like, I think that Dragan is probably going to be a face-up guy, never off the dribble. I'm saying that I think it's a good comparison in terms of defense. It's the skinniest and tallest center that I could think of, right?
Okay. Let's give him a point for this, because, I mean, we know that nowadays the bruising center outside of, you know, what, Boogie, I can't even think of anybody else really,
Carl Whiteside, Anthony Towns is a little bigger. You know?
He is. Whiteside's pretty strong. But for the most part, you can get away without having a bruising, bulky center. Now, like you just said, his build is even Kristaps is kind of – he's a massive guy, even though he doesn't have a lot of mass yet. He's just huge, and I don't see that in Bender. You know, even though Kristaps is skinny.
Here's the reason it works. Okay. For pick and roll centers in the modern NBA, right? I think Dragan Bender, there's no reason why physically he can't deal with that, right? I think he has the length and not necessarily the athleticism, but I think it's fine. Marquese Chris, on the other hand, is basically physically Dwight Howard, right? I mean, for guys like Boogie, for guys like Karl Anthony Towns, you're not going to be putting Dragan on them. You're moving Dragan to cover whoever's at the four. And if you're saying that you're going to play him at three anyways, then, like, why is that an issue?
Wait, he's not going to play a three.
Right, right. I think that he shouldn't be a three. Bad, I think he should be.
That's bad form this year. They're just trying to get him on the court, so he's not going to play a three.
Well, I mean, okay, if Marquese Chris works, right, quote-unquote works out, then why defensively wouldn't he be able to cover even a guy like Boogie? He's such an amazing athlete, and he's huge.
So you're saying that Marquese Chris will be your five? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
He would defend bulky fives. And
say what?
Go ahead.
No, what were you saying?
He would defend the rare back-to-the-basket centers, and Dragan would be against modern fives.
Guarding the five is the five. So just say, I mean, if you think Marquese Chris could be the five, you're saying that's what you're saying.
Well, no, I'm saying that Dragan Bender, for most centers, for the P and R center, for the classic pick and roll center, I think that Dragan Bender is a better fit, right?
I think DeAndre would crush your boy, even in the pick and roll.
Oh, he'd destroy him.
But he's 19. He's the youngest player in the league.
Okay, I mean, unless you think when he gets 22, he'll have another 50 pounds on him, I guess. And it doesn't really matter. I mean, I just don't. If they're good enough, and this, I guess I'll say this: if both of those guys are good enough, where they can make the mismatch on their terms, then it doesn't matter who's the five or who's the four. You know, like I think, I mean, like Steven Adams will destroy either one of them, no matter what. He's a house. You know what I mean? Whiteside will probably have his way with either one of them too. So it doesn't matter who's playing the four or the five. I mean, they're both long, stretchy big men. So.
The irony is we're debating something that almost doesn't exist in the NBA anymore anyways. It's fairly positionless at this point. You're throwing guys out there, and I think either of these guys at the way they are physically now would get destroyed by a larger power forward or center, and we've seen it this year. Now, will they get bigger? Well, I sure hope so. I hope the Suns training staff, who's one of the best in the business, can bulk these guys up, and I think Marquese Chris probably has the potential to add more bulk than you're looking at with Dragan Bender. And
yeah, bulk, the shoulders.
An amazing athlete. I wouldn't even want him to add bulk. I mean, he's good, you know, like.
But right? Amari Stoudemire came in very skinny, added bulk, and was still very much the athletic freak until his knees became a problem. So
right.
His
knees became a problem. That's the thing.
Yeah, and I don't know that was from the extra muscle mass he added rather than predisposition to defects in those knees with what went wrong with him. I think Marquese Chris is going to be a very good player. He's going to be a very athletic player throughout his career, and he could be potentially your five of the future. And if Dragan Bender develops the way that they're hoping, he'll be on the court. Both of these guys will be on the court together, and they'll have to figure it out defensively. But if they pan out the way they think, it's an exciting future for the Phoenix Suns from a big man standpoint.
Here's my point with Dragan Bender, right? I think, you know, the points about Dragan being dominated by larger centers, right? Scoring centers. If you're getting like anywhere like 18 points a game from your center, then that's the type of guy that Marquese Chris would be covering, because Dragan would get smoked. But Dragan Bender, you're not going to have the same issues on like point guard driving, right? And rim protection. I think that you could reasonably expect Dragan Bender to be good just because he's 7'1". I mean, even Sean Bradley got like four blocks a game, and he was awful, but he was long.
Dragan's got great instincts on the defensive end. We even saw it this year. I don't think it's a problem with his instincts on the defensive end. It's just the physical side of things. Look, the Suns have a lot of great pieces, but the problem is, it's a lot of potential right now. These guys have to live up to it. And that's what we're going to see over the next 2 years, is can they live up to it? And it's why a lot of Suns fans here are freaking out over the fact that the Suns have been winning games as of late because it's hurting their draft positioning. But I'd much rather see these young guys starting to gel, learning, figuring themselves out in the NBA and winning some games down the stretch than wanting to see them lose just because of draft positioning. Because the more they win this year, the more they learn about themselves, the better off you are for the future.
I'm with you on that one, man. I'm very pro tanking, but this is a case where your guys are organically starting to win games. Your youth is, I mean, you don't pull the plug on that, right? This experience.
Well, you brought up the Timberwolves. I think that's a reasonable facsimile.
Meaning what? I mean, the Timberwolves have a similar situation
where you want them to be winning because you want their core to show that it's good and it has promise.
Well, yeah, sure. It's I guess it's similar, but the Timberwolves actually came into the season with a lot more expectations, and they actually been pretty disappointing until, you know, maybe even a little recently. But whatever, I get what you're saying. But
I'm saying that them winning now is better for their future than them losing now.
Hey, Chris, hold on. What I'm saying is the Timberwolves already have their star in place. They already have their secondary ball game, right? Because like Greg just said, they don't know exactly what they have in Phoenix yet, and he believes, and I think a lot of people might agree with him, even though they do have Booker, they might need another, you know, star, and the best way to get a star is at the draft. So I get what he's saying. It's a lot more dire for Phoenix than it is for the Timberwolves, right? They already got their pretty much three guys. When LaVine comes back next year too, so they kind of got the core set. Now it's time to start moving forward. Phoenix isn't at that point yet.
Well, Greg, you know what I mean? Okay, a guy we haven't talked about yet is professional scorer T.J. Warren. What do you think about him?
I like him. I was high on him early in the season, and then he had this mysterious head injury where they said, it's a minor head injury. That's all they would say about it. The guy misses 3.5 weeks, and he wasn't the same for a while. So I'm not going to speculate. I don't have any medical degree, but obviously something seriously went wrong at that point, whether they're calling it a minor head injury or not. And it's taken time for him to get back into the swing of things. He finally is. I love his game. He's got natural instincts to get to the hole, score at will. He's a quality guy, but I think if they make a move, he's probably one of the young guys that they part with if they make a trade. I think he's a guy they view as somewhat expendable in this rebuilding process. If he's here, great, nice piece. But in the long run, he's probably a guy they'd part with.
Well, yeah, I love him. I love his talent. And like you said earlier this season, he looked like he might be the one, you know, the 1C to go with Booker's 1B. Yeah. Espo, I've had a concussion in high school. I had a pretty bad one. And even though I guess you might maybe, you know, I guess he's back. Was it a concussion yet?
Well, no, they wouldn't say what all they would literally say was a minor head injury.
Hmm.
Didn't a similar thing happen with Al Horford where he got a concussion and it took a while for him to get back to it?
At least him, it was a real concussion. They said it was a concussion and he was out for, you know, more than I thought he was. He should have been, but it was a concussion. And he's saying this is... They're not even labeling it. That's weird. But I don't know. But the fact that he's back and he fits because I think a team almost like a DeRozan type, just go get buckets guy. I love his game. But at the same time, and like you said, moving forward, when you got Booker and you got Chris and you got, sometimes it's too much. I think that's what's going on in Denver. I think Denver has too much. They need to consolidate some of that talent and make a move. And if you're going to move somebody in Phoenix, you're right. It'll probably be somebody like T.J. Warren, especially if they can. I mean, hey, if they can grab a guy, how would you feel about Josh Jackson?
I would love it. I mean, I'm all for finding the right kind of young talent at the right price right now. I'm finding guys, add him to this mix, and if T.J. Warren is a guy that can go out and get you a piece like that, I'm all for it. Bring him in.
How would you feel about the kid from Florida State? What's his name? Jonathan Isaac.
Another guy that I think
he's the future four.
But yeah, that's the toughest part with the Suns roster is I still feel like Ryan McDonough is in accumulate assets mode and not in build a fully fledged roster for the future because I still think he's looking at it as, okay, I'm going to get young talent, very much the way Danny Ainge looks at things, his mentor, and I'm going to accumulate this young talent and these draft picks so I can make a move that's bigger later on. And I still feel like that's what Ryan McDonagh is preparing for, rather than piecing this roster together meticulously with young guys that will build the entire future. I still think he's looking with one eye to what's the big move I can make.
For sure.
So, yeah. but sometimes that carries its course out. And I mean, we saw at the trade deadline that if you don't look like you're going to make that trade or it's going to cost too much, then you can go forward with those young assets and their assets because they're talented. And I guess I see a fit that as far as 2, 3, 4, 5 with TJ, Booker, Chris, Dragan, that I think you guys don't see, and that's fine. It's definitely not a set in stone thing. We'll see how they develop and, you know, tweak it as it goes along. But one thing we've been sort of beating around the bush with is that the point guard situation is not optimal, right? I think that Bledsoe, I think he's 27, but in terms of his knees and injuries, he's more like 32, 33. And then I think that, you know, pretty much both from an optics perspective and from a value perspective, you can't move Brandon Knight. You know, you moved him for a really great pick.
Brandon has to go. Nope. Brandon has to go.
Yeah. Agree wholeheartedly. And I don't care if you get a second round pick back and salary filler, you get rid of him this summer.
You get a Gatorade bucket and two free passes to a movie, to a
but isn't show. He like Josh Smith? Like, isn't he toxic asset at this point? Like,
no, because he's not a bad guy. He's not a bad guy. He's not a bad locker room guy. Some GM's going to think I can fix him. These GMs are much like, abusive relationships where the people think I can fix this person. I can change this person. There will be a GM that looks at Brandon Knight like that and feels that way. But I said this on the Solar panel this week. I would much rather see Robert Sarver walk out to center court at Talking Stick Resort Arena with $15 million at center court and light that bad boy on fire like Joker style, rather than ever see Brandon Knight take the court again for the Phoenix Suns. I just don't want to see it. There's no point to it. We know what Brandon Knight is, and he doesn't fit the future.
So my turn, I'll say this. I remember when they got Brandon Knight, I was kind of disappointed in Minnesota and Milwaukee for letting him go. And I thought, you know, this would be his breakout. He did a little something in Detroit, did something, a little something in Milwaukee. And I watched him more and more in Phoenix, and I realized that it's almost like if you took Allen Iverson and smacked him in the back of the head with a hammer like Negan, with a bat like Negan. And so now he's brain addled. That's what Brandon Knight's like.
One of the things that Greg mentioned on the Solar panel, their last episode, is that Brandon Knight was a high school valedictorian. And if anything, he's too smart for his own good. I think that that's why he fit with a coach like Jason Kidd, who is I think he was a pretty good fit with Milwaukee.
Yeah, but Jason Kidd ran him out of town, so he obviously didn't fit.
Well, he didn't fit like the timeline. There were reasons why that didn't fit, including like he wanted to be number one. My point with him is that I think that he
Do me a favor. Never ever say a player is too smart for their own good. All right, I know it wasn't meant to be derogatory, but anyway, it's terrible to say that because these guys are NBA players, almost like we're infantilizing these athletes. So don't say that. I don't like that. I don't like, especially about young black players. I hate hearing that.
Okay, that's fair.
I heard that about Jalen Brown.
But how do I put that though?
You say
legitimately. I'm asking.
There's no way to put that.
It's like he got hit in the back of a head with a hammer, which sort of implies that he's dumb. But I don't think he's dumb. No, I think he's smart.
Take a deep breath. I didn't say he was dumb. He's basketball dumb. The difference between dumb and basketball dumb. Right, so he knows how to do one thing. He wants to score, and whether you're ahead or behind, if he's making them, they're great. But when you're behind, he's doing it. He's going to just come in and shoot. That's not being dumb. That's basketball dumb. Basketball dumb and dumb are two different things. And so I'm pretty sure he's a smart kid. He believes that he's a starting point guard in this league, and he's just not. He's not. And he has a contract that says he is, but he's not. So you got to move that.
Well, and what you bring up is what bothered me so much about him this season is the fact that he thinks he's a starting point guard. They asked him to play the six-man role and said, look, we feel you can be very good at this. And it felt like he put little or no effort towards it. Like, he just thought, I'm a starting point guard, and this is somewhat beneath me to have to take this role. And he wasn't even the same guy he was last year for the Suns. They were looking for him to basically come in and score and be a scoring guard, and he couldn't even accomplish that off the bench. And that's what bothered me the most about it was they asked you to, you know, you're still getting paid starting point guard money, but they said, look, we need a role that needs to be filled here, and he just didn't seem to have a desire to do that.
Well, and okay.
I think it's a lot like the Reggie Jackson situation where he's so adamant that he's a starter that now he especially has the money up, like almost like a starter. It is a bad situation, even if he's not toxic. And I believe you, Greg, when you say that he's not really toxic, he's been professional. But I think it's to that point. It's almost like when Goran and Bledsoe were there, it gets to a certain point where it's like, all right, well, he's not going to change. This is not what we need from him. It's not a good fit. It's time to just cut bait and run.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I just think that I think that the Phoenix Suns have different aspirations than the majority of NBA teams. So we know that Brandon Knight can start and he can score 20 points a game. He was almost an all-star on a...
You can't start him on any team.
On a borderline NBA, like, playoff team, right? That Bucks team with him at point guard leading the charge him scoring like 20 points a game. He was almost an all-star. They won 40 games and were like the eighth seed and got smoked by the Cavs, I think, is what ended up happening. So he can fit that role. I don't think he's a point guard on a legitimately good team. I can go that far, but that's not aspirationally what most teams in the league want. And I think the reason why he got chased out of town with Milwaukee is because he thought he was the number one guy on that team. But when Antetokounmpo revealed himself as this potential superstar, Milwaukee was, okay, we need to reevaluate our aspirations. We're going to go for a championship with Jabari and with Antetokounmpo. And Brandon Knight can only bring us so far.
Okay, so now the reason they traded him, honestly, and Jason Kidd said this, is first, I think he realized what me and Greg are saying. You can't really have him as your starter and competent offense. And two, he said he didn't want to tie up all that money in the backcourt with Chris Middleton already getting paid. And so he's like, we can't max out our backcourt when we got other guys coming down the pipeline, which makes sense.
That's what I said, right? Like, the Suns are in a different situation aspirationally than like, let's see, what team is just trying to be like?
Well, see, no, I also think that the Suns were, like Greg was saying, they thought, we can change him. We can make him fit. And it's obvious that they can't, you know? He's out of the rotation now because they can't, you know what I mean? And this is a team that they could have used what he does, and they literally just don't play him anymore. That should tell you everything you kind of need to know. And he's one of those players, like, if he had that Jamal Crawford mindset and maybe slowed the game down a little bit and actually, you know, maybe hone his game, but no, he comes up there and he puts his head down, you know, five times, and he'll pull up any shot he sees. There's nowhere. I don't know where he's going to fit, especially if he wants to start.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly not on Phoenix. I think we can all agree with that. Last word I want to give to Espo, and then we can close this thing out. So we've asked the same question basically since they gave away the Lakers pick and Isaiah Thomas for free for some reason. Now that I think it's clear and has been clear for a while that Bledsoe and Brandon Knight are not the point guards of the future, what now? Like, what do you do? Yeah, I mean, like you said, you just get rid of Brandon Knight for whatever. What about Bledsoe? Like, what do you want to do?
Well, I think that's the big question going into this offseason. Let's take a step back. You bring up the IT Gorin mess, and I'll shed a little light on this. What happened was Gorin came to management and said, look, I will re-sign with you if you get rid of Isaiah Thomas. So they go into full-fledged try to trade Isaiah Thomas mode. They get close on a deal, and Gorn pulls the rug out from under them when they came back from All-Star break, and obviously his agent had gotten in his ear, and he said, I can't play for these people. They're liars. I can't be here. So now they've got an Isaiah Thomas deal pretty much done, and he's unhappy because he knows they're trying to deal him. Gorin's now said he's not going to play for him, so they wind up in an inenviable situation where they basically have to deal both guys because they're going to have a malcontent one way or another. So they make a panic move to bring in Brandon Knight, hoping that he's the fix and all that. That was, I think getting rid of IT, getting rid of Gorin was probably the right thing to move this team in the future. The problem was the panic move to get Brandon Knight as a potential replacement for him. So that's just a little bit of the history on that. And then moving forward, I'm not ready to write off Eric Bledsoe as not part of this future. It depends on how close they think that these young guys are to really contributing. I still think Eric Bledsoe can be a borderline all-star over the next few years, a guy that could help. He's turned into somebody who's really embraced the role of trying to be a leader. He even went as far as to get a life coach over the last year, and he's talked about it, to try to pull out more of his vocal leadership, which he'd been criticized for in the past, and he's done that this year. What will happen, and it all hinges, as we talked about earlier in the show, is the draft lottery. If the Suns wind up with one of those top two picks and they're looking at a point guard being the best player that they can take, then they'll do one of two things. They'll either flip Eric Bledsoe as part of a package for another bigger name that they can bring in, or they'll decide, you know what, let's go all in right now and try to find that superstar. We'll trade the one or two pick, some of these young assets, and bring in a big time guy to go along with Bledsoe, with Booker, and hope that that's enough to really make you a potential contender, a second tier contender in the Western Conference. So everything that you'll need to know about the future of the Phoenix Suns will happen in June. They will determine what their path is in terms of that, and it'll all hinge on what the pick they get, and then do they feel if Eric Bledsoe is the guy that can continue to be with them and they can get a superstar dangling that pick, or can they get a nice young piece by flipping Eric Bledsoe that'll play along with that pick and the young guys they already have on the roster.
James, you got anything to say in parting?
I just love Eric Bledsoe. I hope no matter what, he finds somewhere where he's wanted and he's allowed to be featured, because like you said, he's one of those forgotten players because of where he plays, and the injuries is an easy excuse for the last couple of years, but he's been healthy this year and he's been amazing, and he can really help like a really good team. I'm just trying to think where he could fit.
I hear the Pistons are looking for a new point guard.
He would be amazing there, except nobody wants Reggie Jackson. Yeah, I've always been a big fan of his. He's in the prime of his career. Let's hope he got the injuries behind him. You know, it's weird because he's had alternating seasons of healthy, not healthy. Seriously, he's played 80, then 40, then 76, then 43, then 81, then 31 last year. This is his healthy season. Let's keep our fingers crossed next season is also a healthy season. He breaks the curse. But I think he's good for that. I was saying the same thing Greg was saying earlier about, I was like, oh, he must want to get traded. He doesn't want to babysit. But then I did some research and I saw that he really embraced it this summer. He was doing group workouts. He flew out to LA or something.
He flew them all out to San Diego to work out together for a week. Yeah.
And he was having over his house. And that's awesome. That's awesome that he's found somewhere he loves and they love him back, because the guy's he's an amazing player. And let's hope that these guys grow with him and they keep him. And, Greg, I hope you don't get upset with me. I hope they get a pick that's, more in the team, so they can just draft maybe that center you're wanting or somebody else to help, and they keep Eric Bledsoe, because I want to see him there. I don't want to see him go anywhere.
I agree. Honestly, I think the best case scenario probably is for the Suns to pick fourth or fifth and add one of the small forwards at the top of this draft that are talented, because I think, like we talked about, I'm not sure TJ Warren's the starter at that position, and I'd like to see him keep Eric Bledsoe. Not only is he great on the court, but I've gotten to know the guy. He's a great guy too, and that's the kind of guy you want around young players to help help guide them. And I think he could be a key piece if this team's ready to take that next step in the next couple of years.
We're going to end the podcast there. I appreciate both you guys coming on and yelling at me about different stuff. Mostly James was taking the role of yelling at me for things. So for that, I appreciate you.
Bad ideas, Chris. I can't help it. Some of your ideas are just so bad. I just get furious.
I changed your mind about Boogie, man. You didn't like Boogie. Now you love Boogie.
No, you didn't change my mind. You acted.
Yeah, I did. I changed your mind. You came on my podcast before. You were like, nope, can't win with Boogie. Boogie's not going to work. And then a few days later, you're tweeting, well, honestly, okay, I changed my mind about Boogie. Love Boogie.
Look what happened. Look what happened. I'm kind of right, because look what's happening in Pelicans right now. So until he proves it, maybe I was right.
Bullshit. Okay. Espo, thanks for coming on and not yelling at me. You can find him at Espo, and you can listen to him on the Solar Panel, which is our Phoenix Suns A-team over at the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. That's on almightyballer.com. James, you can be found. What?
You sound so angry.
Oh God. I'm always like a healthy angry at you after we record.
I see that. Yeah, you always sound very exasperated. That's a better word. You sound exasperated.
No, but that's like exactly what you want out of a sparring match. Like,
It's not what I want. I just want you to be better, and I'm trying to teach you, and you refuse to be better. You say things like, let's build the Celtics out of freaking Phoenix, even though it's 2017.
He's your Kevin McHale. He just wants to help you out like you want Kevin McHale to help out Boogie.
Right? I'm the pop.
I said that we should build the Celtics. No, I'm saying that the Pelicans could be the next Celtics. All they need is Luke Babbitt.
I know. It was supposed to be a joke, and it's a horrible joke, as most of your jokes are. So I want you to be better. That's all.
Yeah. I thought you explicitly said at the start of this podcast that you were just happy to come on and berate me. So that's another time you've turned tail on something that you've said and said the opposite thing. So,
by berating you, I'm trying to make you be better. I'm like one of those tough, I'll smack you in the back with the cane while you're doing push ups and stuff to make you tougher.
So it's like tough love.
Except I hate you. Yeah.
All right, at J Holis Hoops, he's also the host of The Truth, a Celtics podcast. It's been particularly great recently. I talked about he had Bethlehem Scholes, also at Free Darko, is another one of his monikers. You can Nathaniel Friedman. That's it. You can find.
He's gonna be a regular guest on my show like once a month.
Nice. I think that's awesome. But he's also had other great guests, so you should. I definitely recommend that you keep track of it. Anything that either of you guys want to plug before we officially close this clusterfuck of a podcast?
No, that's about it. Me and Greg, we do.
There's more that we could talk about. Do you guys want to talk about Earl Watson a little bit?
No, I actually need to get to bed. I have work in 6 hours.
I know.
So.
I was just kidding. All right. Well, good night, everyone. Thank you for listening. You can find me at Almighty Ballin. But more importantly, I want you to go check out, follow at ABPN Podcasts, and check out the rest of our shows. You'll find them all at almightyballer.com. They're all excellent, like the Solar Panel and like The Truth. You know, I highly recommend all of them. Go find the podcast for your favorite team, favorite subject, all available there. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time, listener. Or I won't see you, but, you know, I'll talk to you next time.
Oh, my God.
Dude, I'm doing my best, okay? All right?
I just want you to be better.
All right. Good night, everyone. Check you later, skater. See you later, alligator. Good night.
He hates Miami. Me so much on this show.
It's awesome.
It's horrible.
No, man. It's like, you know, a performance, man. Like, do you not catch that vibe?
What?
That we yell at each other. It's great.
Hey, Greg.
Yeah. What's up?
I hope he can't hear me. It's not a performance on my part.
Oh, I actually. Do you remember?
He can hear me.
After the first time that you came on the podcast, I DM'd you and was like, wait, are we cool, man?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dude, yeah. You were so annoying about Boogie that day.
I was right, though.
No, all right, actually weren't, because I told you, and I didn't say this on the show because you think you'd call me a liar. No, I literally, before they even made the deal, I was like, you know what? I really see what they mean with Boogie now, and I can understand why if they don't make the trade for him. And when I heard that's part of the reason they didn't want to make the trade, they said that Coach Stevens wanted no part of Boogie in the locker room. That's part of it. They said, yeah, we could. Yeah, Boston, they didn't want any part of him around the team.
I thought that was it. Like, that was the reason. The only reason.
I mean, Ainge probably would have done it if he went to Stevens. He was like, oh, yeah, sure, bring him in. But, yeah, like, him and Isaiah were like, nah, we're good.
Yeah. All right, guys. Greg's got to go to bed. I've got to, you know, do my cool guy stuff. And James got to go back into the hole that he crawled out of.